Song Poker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Song Poker.
Oh my God, is that... You said this week I would like to introduce the episode.
I said I didn't mind doing the introduction. I mean, if I said hello, I mentioned the name of the show. I mean, do you, what more do you want?
The last few episodes, I've kind of put in a bit of effort, actually. I've written an intro that's befitting of the piece of work that we're discussing. And so you've just done this sort of this very laid-back, lugubrious...
Lugubrious? That's a long word for you.
Yeah, I have no idea what it means.
Well, it's interesting the effect that being up late at night has on you. So, well, sorry, let me start again. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Song Poker, the jolly little podcast that can. It often doesn't, but it can, in theory. I'm Ian. This is my friend James. Say hello.
Hi.
Great. And we're here to talk at length, with erudition and passion, about the glory of music and being a music fan. Was that better?
Yeah, that was actually. That was pretty good.
I'll let you into a bit of inside baseball. I've just opened a can of... It's a mango-flavoured IPA. This is now my third beer of the afternoon. So my contribution, while brilliant at this point, is going to tail off really quite rapidly into sort of incoherent and insensible rambling.
I suspect the audience have already noticed that.
I suspect they won't notice the difference at all, but each to their own.
I have a letter to start this episode, actually. I mean, I say a letter, it's an email. Quite nice to receive something, you know.
Absolutely. I'm stunned.
So it begins, Dear Ian and Jason, I just wanted to drop a little old note to express much love for your pod. My dad and I love to listen and chortle along to the often hilarious and insightful musical journeys you guys take us on. I particularly love your oblique references to niche 80s pop culture. Some might say that may well limit your potential listenership, or harm your chances of appreciably monetizing the brand. And others might say that by being so negative and acerbic, you might appear insufferably superior or just plain out of touch. But don't listen to those absolute losers. I, like so many out there, absolutely love what you do. Yours sincerely, M. Cyrus Montana. P.S. I bet you're both very handsome. You sure do sound like it. That's nice, isn't it?
That's a lovely message, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder who M. Cyrus is.
Yeah, no idea. But
that's that reminds me, actually, I something I should have mentioned. So a long time ago, there was one of these things on Facebook from like an REM fan group.
Mm.
And it was I think when the 25th anniversary of Up happened. And I'd sort of made some comment about what my favourite song on the album was. And I'd posted a link to our episode in that fan group. Do you know who liked that message the other night?
Who?
It was a gentleman by the name of Bill Berry.
You're joking.
Now, I have absolutely no reason to believe he's actually on the end of that account. It's probably a lackey or a factotum. But there is a parallel universe where Bill Berry might have actually listened to our episode about Up.
Or at least the first couple of minutes and then turned it off
in
disgust.
Yeah. Yeah, that's much more likely.
In a change to the advertised programme, I'm going to quiz you this week. Having looked at Queen last week and was reminded, of course, that Bohemian Rhapsody in 1975, the year of our birth, spent 9 weeks at number one, I thought I would test you on some of the other number ones from that year. Unusually, 20 different artists had number one songs that year, but number one, when we were born, the week that we were born, so you were born one day before me, do you know what that was?
I feel like I used to know. I can't remember at the moment.
It's a British artist. He's devilishly handsome, and his surname should remind us of where we were born.
So I'm guessing David Essex.
It was David Essex with Hold Me Close.
Hold Me Close.
Yeah, taking over from a gentleman who we've talked about a lot on this pod, who has been a mainstay.
Cliff.
No, not Cliff. No, the Bowie. Other mainstay.
Bowie.
No, the other mainstay to Bowie. We've not been the kindest to him, though he remains an astonishing performer. It's only little old Rod Stewart.
Oh, fuck me, it's Rod Stewart. Was it something like Baby Jane or...
No, Baby Jane's later, I think. It's Sailing. So your parents would have been... just having a lovely dinner party and listening to the number one record by Rod Stewart, Sailing. And then David Essex takes over and your mum decides to drop you. Earlier in the year, around Valentine's Day, Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile was number one. And of course, we lost Steve Harley. And that song, legend has it, was written when Steve Harley apparently was living at the top of Sheergate Steps in Colchester.
Did you know that Steve Harley was very nearly the Phantom of the Opera?
I didn't know that.
He stepped in to obviously do the single for the song Phantom of the Opera with Sarah Brightman. And they were kind of putting the show together at that time. And Harley spent a couple of months working on a lot of the other songs with Hal Prince. And was being incorporated into the show and was all set to... be the Phantom when the show opened, but I think somewhere along the line someone decided that he really wasn't very good and he was ousted.
Or maybe Michael Crawford came in with that big dick energy.
What are you doing with the Cockney Rebel?
from you know, fresh from his massive success as Condor Man.
Yeah, I could do with a job.
So that was my first sort of thing when I heard about Steve Harley dying was, the Phantom Who Never Was.
Well, there you go. I mean, not so much a quiz, it's more of a sort of discussion about 1975 there. Now, moving on. And this will be the last episode for this series of Song Poker. So we thought we'd go out on a bang, did we not? We are going to be talking about one of the biggest albums of all time. It's Fleetwood Mac's 1977 album, Rumours. Their 11th studio album.
And they've got an interesting story, haven't they? Because they started off as a kind of blues jazz kind of outfit. And then, was it Peter Green left the band? And then somewhere down the road they found Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, brought them on board and became a completely different band.
Indeed, yeah, it's a strange outfit. You know, Peter Green was great, but with him, it was a very British-sounding band. But you're absolutely right. Buckingham Nicks gave them that California sheen, did it? Didn't they? The sort of the kudos of that 70s West Coast Canyon chic. Yeah, the lineup changes. Buckingham is currently out. In their last tour, they've had Neil Finn from Crowded House. And Mike Campbell from the Heartbreakers. So if you've seen any... actually, they don't sound bad live. When Mike Campbell certainly can match Buckingham's licks.
So in my head now, I'm at work on a little poem that rhymes Buckingham's licks with Stevie Nicks. But, you know, leave it with me, and by the end of the episode, I think I'll have something pretty bulletproof.
I'll look forward to that. So when were you first aware of Fleetwood Mac?
Oh, Diane. That was the first time that they skated across my consciousness.
Oh, so you knew Oh, Diane, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, of course, in 87 they had Tango in the Night, so that's a huge album, I was very aware of that. I remember sort of hearing that essentially they, like a lot of the bands of their ilk, they'd apparently had their day and they weren't particularly fashionable at the time in the late 80s. They were still huge and very, very popular, but I guess dinosaur-like perhaps, a bit like Dire Straits.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the Reynolds girls would rather Jack than Fleetwood Mac.
But where are the Reynolds girls now?
Well, exactly. Yeah, do they have a multi-platinum album?
They don't.
Are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Have they spawned countless cover bands the world over?
Are there urban myths that the Reynolds girls had people blow cocaine up their anuses? I don't think so. I remember thinking when that song came out that it was a very confrontational attitude to adopt. And we must be talking about 89 or 90, but I remember thinking Fleetwood Mac have been around for quite a while. And you're a one-hit wonder, so maybe lay off the Mac.
It was very bold, wasn't it? Yeah. So I assumed, actually, that you would have first come into contact with Fleetwood Mac through your love of F1, because, of course, the chain from this album was the BBC's theme music.
It was, but I did not start watching Formula One until the last Sunday in August of 1991.
Okay, so on to the album itself. Rumours was an instant commercial success. It sold over 10 million copies worldwide within a month of its release. It won.
That's album quite good, isn't it?
It's pretty hot.
Yes.
It won Album of the Year at the 78 Grammy Awards and has received many certifications, something like 21 times platinum in the US. And I think it's the 9th best-selling album of all time. It was selected for preservation in the National Recording Registry in 2017 for being deemed culturally, historically and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress.
Wow.
It's number 7 in Rolling Stone's list of the greatest albums of all time. I believe it's still around the top 20 in the UK for the last 5 years. Such as its draw on vinyl still.
Wow.
So we are dealing with quite a significant album, it's fair to say.
I'm sort of a bit scared now, because if it's that popular, then anything we say will only lead to us being sort of rounded up and hung.
What are our hot take? Because this is an often analysed and much talked about album. What is our hot take about it? You know, we to add to the discussion, we've got to come up with something interesting.
Well, I mean, certainly something new and interesting and different would be to suggest that it's crap. I don't know how far down that particular road we can saunter.
Well, this
knowing
is an awful album, isn't it?
It's dismal. All the songs sound the same.
Absolutely wretched.
There are no guitar solos that live in the memory.
Where then in the French camp, evidently, because apparently it was in 1977, it was the number one album worldwide, you know, in the US, Australia number one, UK number one, Canada number one, France number 116.
I mean, they've never really quite got music on the continent, have they?
So what are your personal feelings about Rumours? I find that it's a multifunctional album, in a sense, in that it's so well balanced. You know, it mixes acoustic with electric. It's folky yet rocky. It's joyous and contemplative. It's acidic but sweet. You can party with it or you can wallow with it. We talked about this with Queen last time, I suppose. It speaks of the input from all the creatives offering up their work, call and answer almost in points. But
no, I think you've hit on something there, because were we to both sort of go through our personal favourite albums, there'd be the one you play at a party, the one you like to lie in bed when it's raining and feel sad and nostalgic with, the breakup album maybe, one that evokes your youth. And this song, this album has elements of all of those things. So maybe what places it as high as it is in the rock firmament is the fact that it's all things to all listeners.
Yeah, I think that's true. Every song is great. Or is it? Because is O Daddy great? Or is O Daddy sick and wrong?
There are some tracks on here which are intensely memorable and will live with you forever. And then there's about three or four other ones that they've just put on to round out the album.
Okay, so we open with Secondhand News by Lindsay Buckingham.
Yeah.
Going into Dreams.
Dreams is a great song. Secondhand News strikes me as kind of forgettable.
Oh, I love it.
Do you?
I really do, yeah.
When I put the album on every, you know, 3 or 4 years for its for its regular listen. I'm always surprised that it doesn't start with Dreams. In a very strong album, I feel this is quite a disposable song, but you feel differently.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a jaunty, upbeat opening about loss.
A jaunty, upbeat opening about the loss of Stevie Nicks, of which more later. Just looking through it's all just kind of bulletproof, really, with the possible exception of Oh Daddy. So track three, we have Never Going Back Again. Would you go back again?
I would. I'd like to go back there again. So this was the B-side to Don't Stop in the US. It was the B-side to You Make Loving Fun for the British single. Apparently, the working title for the song was Brushes, because it was originally recorded with Mick on drums, just using drum brushes.
Where was the album recorded?
In California, Sound City Studios.
And was this the album where the girls were living together, because they'd both broken up with members of the band, I want to say?
This is an album about several breakups, isn't it? You know, Nicks and Buckingham sort of famously and acrimoniously split. Mm. But of course, Christine and John McVie had also split. Mick Fleetwood had also recently had a divorce as well. So it's not a happy camp that there are.
They're people under a certain amount of stress and pressure. Isn't it extraordinary that, given that set of dynamics, they sat, presumably at some point, whether they were talking to each other through their lawyers or whatever, but why would you keep going? Like, imagine going into a recording studio for 3 months with your very freshly exed ex. I couldn't do that. I certainly wouldn't be capable of writing anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless they were driven by that conflict, or unless much has been made about those relationships in a sort of interwoven narrative that sells records, like somehow that they're somehow cynically exploiting that.
And I don't know when Buckingham and Nicks rocked up and joined the band, but it's not like they were locked into this kind of behemoth that they'd never be able to escape from, so they might as well go along with it. They could have bailed, you know. It's only this album, I believe, that really made them global superstars.
Yeah, they knew which side their bread was buttered, I guess.
It's incredible to me that this album got recorded and indeed written, because I would have thought most people, 9 times out of 10, would all rather avoid an awkward encounter with an ex rather than go and sit in a studio with them and write songs about breaking up.
I suppose so. I mean, I think by the time they'd got to Tango in the Night, the feelings hadn't abated, but I think that Lindsey Buckingham was producing that and had done a lot of work on his own in the studio. Mm. I think with Rumours, the only song really that everyone contributed, everyone gets a writing credit, is The Chain. To me, that's why that song is so great as well. It's a sort of an expression of those fractured relationships. You know, damn your love, damn your lies, those bitter recriminations. But it's set to such beautiful music and so dramatic as well. The composition is really dramatic, isn't it? But the rest of them, I guess, as songwriters, they've all sort of gone into the studio kind of separately, and perhaps they just sort of laid down their own tracks completely separately. They're not all sitting in a room jamming together, are they? They don't all play it live in the studio, so.
Well, that makes more sense then.
You know, maybe Stevie Nicks came in at 4 a.m. whilst, you know, Lindsay went home to bed.
And they did sort of shift work. But then again, she's got to come in, she's got to put up all the cloths, all the candles, have her little special mat she stands on, all the beads, all the...
In her Rhiannon persona, yeah. Yes.
She has to slaughter several chickens and use their blood to summon the demon god Al-Gagaroth.
Yes.
And then she can start singing. So you're talking realistically no earlier than 6.
And then, once she's done all that, then she reads the lyrics that have been left to her, sort of taped up on the studio wall, and it's packing up, shacking up is all you want to do.
Yeah.
No wonder she's a bit cross.
So then you've got Don't Stop and Go Your Own Way.
Yeah. Standout track on the album for me. It's one of my favourite songs of all time. I never tire of it.
I can listen to that final guitar solo under the final chorus for the rest of my life on repeat. It's just magnificent.
It is magnificent.
And again, with the message basically of piss off then. It's a brute. Don't Stop just makes me think of Bill Clinton.
It really does, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
On You Make Loving Fun, that's a Christine McVie song, and it's about her new boyfriend who was, I believe, the band's lighting designer. So again, sort of added another level of discomfort added to the dynamic when they're going out on tour. Thinking about her with John McVie, if I wore those little denim hot pants that he insisted on wearing a lot, I wouldn't make loving fun. You know, my partner wouldn't think loving me was fun.
You'd probably make loving kind of creepy.
Yeah, it would make loving revolting.
It would make loving fundamentally impossible. Of all the band members and taking them as a whole and analysing their individual contributions, for me, Christine McVie is the one that kind of stands out because I think the band would have been fine without her.
I think she would have been fine without them. Well, this is the nature of Fleetwood Mac, though. They are greater than the sum of their parts, surely. But I think she was an awesome songwriter and really contributed a great deal. Though, I mean, look at the tracks that she wrote for this album, Oh Daddy Aside, you know, You Make Love in Fun, Songbird. I mean, that's a massive song.
I think there's something weird in the juxtaposition of her voice alongside, you know, Lindsay and Stevie, to pretend we're on first name terms.
I don't agree. I think that they work in lovely harmony together, and especially on Tango in the Night, actually.
Those
three work beautifully together, I think,
and it's nice to have a band with the two different accents and
the transatlanticism of it all is great. Christine McVie and Lindsay Buckingham later went on to make a couple of albums together, one pretty recently actually, and that was really good. So they obviously value each other's work and company.
Maybe they were at it as well.
I think at one point Stevie Nicks might have been at it with Mick Fleetwood, which is a rather disconcerting...
He was getting his kicks on Route Stevie Nicks.
Can we talk briefly about the album cover? Because it's a really iconic cover, but it has those two on it. I found it very enigmatic as a kid. But what the fuck is it? It's Stevie and Rhiannon sort of doing this sort of floaty...
And
he's standing there with his long legs, one perched on a chair. Is it a really good cover because it's so iconic and instantly recognisable? Or is it bloody awful?
I get a kind of crowy, raveny, avian thing from it. Mainly, I guess, from Stevie Nicks and her big wings. But there's that kind of ghostly, deathly Edgar Allan Poe, which doesn't necessarily belong with the thematic text of the album, but is a kind of omen of death and decay. And that is a powerful bit of semiotic iconography.
Nice semiotics there, I like that.
I should drink more of this beer, it's wonderful.
Yeah. I like to think of Mick Fleetwood as some sort of symbol of decay in his own right.
What are some of the very worst album covers you can think of?
I don't like Diamond Dogs. The Bowie album.
Is that because you find it upsetting?
Yeah, it's really weird.
It is iconic. I don't think you can say it's not a great album cover because it's at least capable of stimulating a bit of conversation, whereas, say, a close-up of Madonna's face doesn't leave you with quite so much thinking to do. And not a particular Madonna album, one that I've just made up. But I think you have to agree that Rumours, like any great piece of visual art, just because you don't understand it, you can't say that it's not a masterpiece. That's what I've been told. Those are the rules I live by.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, music, art is subjective, blah-de-blah-de-blah. But there are absolutes. Bridge Over Troubled Water is a great song. Rumours is a great album.
Yep.
Caravaggio Ineffable. Is a master of light.
Darth Vader was a master of darkness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These are absolutes. Ronan Keating's voice is awful.
There's no getting away from it. On the subject of things there's no getting away from, let's talk about Formula One.
Oh my God, this is so good!
The BBC had, I believe, had that snatch of the chain for most of the 80s, certainly for all of the 90s, and then they lost the rights to broadcast Formula One, and ITV did their own thing, which was, you know, forgettable and terrible. But when the BBC got Formula One back in the form of radio broadcasts and podcasts, they were still using the chain right up until the end of last year. And then this year, suddenly, for some reason, they've dropped it and they're using some generic bit of, you know, nonsense. You have to wonder, have Fleetwood Mac suddenly put the price up in 2024? Why would you drop it now when that song is, in the same way that a police box is just a TARDIS now and no one really knows what a police box is? That bit of music is just the Formula One bit of music now, and some people might be aware there's 3 minutes and 53 seconds of heartbreak that leads into it.
I wonder what the public outcry has been like. Loud and vociferous, or just
I would have barely a whimper. Say you're Lindsay Buckingham. You're sitting down to watch. Right. No, say it again. But like you mean it.
I'm Lindsay Buckingham.
That's excellent. Now, it's 12 o'clock on a Sunday. You're sitting down to watch the Monaco Grand Prix. You turn on the telly and they're not playing your song. Run with it. Go with it. Emote.
I'm Lindsay Buckingham and I'm fucking disgusted.
I'm Lindsay Buckingham, the Dark Lord of Fuckingham. I want my money back. What's this bullshit racing track? It's probably something like that, I imagine.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm putting that in my song about Lindsay Buckingham licks Stevie Nicks. trust me, by the end of the episode, this is going to be a fucking masterpiece. There was a really good tour film from Fleetwood Mac that... So it would have been on BBC in the very late 90s, so I'm guessing the tour must have been mid-90s. And they did a live version of Tusk with all these, like a mariachi marching band came out, and it just built into a really massive performance. And that, you know, oh, that blew me away.
They have been known for a little excess, haven't they? You know, sort of,
they have.
Have you ever seen them live?
No, I have not. Do you think there's enough of the actual Rumours lineup still knocking around to make going to see them worth it? Because You're probably not going to get Buckingham. You're probably not going to get Christine McVie.
No, she's dead.
So you're going to get what? Mick Fleetwood and Stevie Nicks?
Well, you get the rhythm section, John McVie. And
his little hot pants, even though he's well into his 80s.
Perhaps you'd rather go and see a cover band. When I was in South Essex a while back, I saw a poster for one called Brentwood Mac.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Because you haven't really got a lot of things to work with when you're putting together a sort of pun name for a cover band. I mean, obviously, Fleetwood Cac.
Obviously.
Obviously. But what else have you really got? So we round out the album. We'll skip over Oh Daddy, because really. Gold Dust Woman, which is just exceptional.
It really is. And what a voice, by the way.
Yeah,
Stevie Nicks has, you know.
And still has, you know, all this time later, despite everything that she may or may not have done with her life. But she's still got a really beautiful voice. I mean,
yeah.
She still turns up. I mean, she's appeared on a Gorillaz album in the last, I think it was last year, in fact.
Oh, really?
Was on a Lana Del Rey album back in about 2015. She's always been around. One of the first songs I really, really loved was Stevie Nicks' Rooms on Fire.
Rooms on Fire, great song.
I love that song.
Yeah,
that's a brilliant. God, that's good. There is no situation in your life that you can't improve by putting that on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I feel the same about her duet with Tom Petty as well, Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Man, what a song that is.
Yeah. She brings a quality to... Probably she could sing a lot of real crap, but just because it's her singing it, it would sound really good.
And that is the mark of a true artist.
That is the mark of a goddess who walks amongst us. And then Silver Springs, which...
Was not on the original album, but was included on a re-release.
So if you were going to the proverbial desert island and you're allowed 10 Fleetwood Mac songs...
Oh, God.
What are you taking that's not on Rumours?
That's not on Rumours.
That's okay. Not on Rumours.
Okay, so my 10 tracks would be Man of the World from the Peter Green era. Rhiannon, love that. That's from the album... Fleetwood Mac. I'd have the title track from Tusk.
Yep.
And maybe Sarah as well. And then Tango in the Night. I'd have Big Love, Seven Wonders, Little Lies, Everywhere, Family Man. Oh, I love Isn't It Midnight. I absolutely love that song.
I think, to be honest, it sounds like we are both bumping on exactly the same songs. And my initial question wasn't the question I should have asked. I should have said, what from Rumours is actually making it into our top 10? Because that's clearly the only way around that this is going to work. Because I think there's more that's not on Rumours that has to come to my desert island.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a tricky
like
one.
You say, Tusk, Rhiannon, Big Love, Little Lies, Seven Wonders.
Yeah.
It's all. Let me be absolutely barbaric. You can take 3 songs from Rumours to a desert island with you.
Go Your Own Way.
Yeah,
The Chain, You Make Love and Fun.
Interesting.
Mm.
I wouldn't have gone for that. Probably Gold Dust Woman. Clearly, this is a classic album, and this is like by no means the kind of be-all and end-all of Fleetwood Mac. I think we'll have to do a separate episode about Tango in the Night, the often derided album that is, some could say it's as good.
I would definitely say it's as good.
Well, we'll come back, and when we do, we'll dig up some more Fleetwood Mac. But we're not going to be back for a little while. We're going to have a little break, as we said at the start of the show. We'll have a month or two off to recharge our ears and load up our Spotify accounts with some new music to talk about. Just before we go, I believe it's my turn to nominate 2 songs for Voiding the Vom.
Voiding the Vom.
Excellent.
We've been doing this for a few weeks. I know how this works. I know how you think. I know what you like. This week, I'm going to very much play the system.
Are you gaming me?
I'm going to game you. There is a song I despise, possibly above all others. And my God, I'm going to see it blasted into space in about a minute from now.
Okay.
So let me give you your 2 choices. You can choose to get rid of either of these songs. The first one is called The Fly, and that's by a band called U2.
You should have gone with me.
Well, there's a turn up for the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, thought we'd blast that into space. I don't know how you'd feel about that.
I think I know what's happening here.
I think you do. I think you do. And I think you know probably full well that my second choice is by a band called OMC, and it's called How Bavar. Brother Bellet's in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash out from behind, loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. So off you go, get to work, make your decision. How Bavar, How Bavar.
You too have had two tracks. This is one of our favourite bands. You've had two tracks in this Pointing the Bomb.
Yeah.
But one of them is ill-deserved. You know, The Fly, it's not one of my favourites of theirs, but it doesn't belong here. Do you want to speak a little about why you hate this so much? Because as far as I remember, you always really enjoyed this song.
I really... like The Fly, I think it's visually brilliant. It ushers in that whole new era for U2. It knocked Bryan Adams off the number one spot. It's just a glorious, sleazy reinvention of the band with that whole sort of undercurrent of James Joyce and Night Town and where the band were going stylistically. I think it's just a masterpiece. But I'm choosing it because I know you won't blast it into space. Because you can't do that. And moving on to talking perhaps about How Bavar by OMC. I really hate that song.
I was going to do OMC How Bavar at some point. Because I was talking to my sister the other day about the episode we did about our parents, you know. Uh-huh. And she was saying, you forgot the story about OMC How Bavar. And I had to be reminded that my mother... crashed her car in slow motion to that track
because she was so appalled by what she was hearing.
I presumably. Don't know, or was so enchanted by it and delighted.
Well, let's not lose all touch with reality. Clearly what's happened is she's driving along, she's listening to that shit, and her ears, in an attempt to protect her, have kind of, I don't know, moved to block off all her other senses. She's lost control of the wheel. It makes sense that the body would shut down in times of acute distress.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That must have been what happened.
That literally must have been what happened. Every time I hear that man's voice and why that man thought, oh, I know what I'll do with a voice this unpleasant. I'll have a massive pop chart hit and inflict this voice on the whole fucking world.
In memory of my mother, I'm going to... send it up in slow motion.
Voiding the Vom.
What did OMC stand for?
Was it Horrible Music Club?
Horrible Music Club.
3, 2, 1, 0.
As they're flying up, it's Otara Millionaires Club. They're from New Zealand. Best known for their 1995 hit, How Bavar. Now, never to be heard again.
Banish it.
Okay, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to this first season of Song Poker by Electric Sodcast, Ian Martin and James Burton. We'll be back, which would probably amount to a few short weeks with season two, once we've decided what we'd like to talk about.
Let's say we'll be back in the summer.
Splendid. Until then, have a lovely spring, everybody.
Boing.
Happy listening. Toodle pipsky.
Cheery bum. Song Poker was produced by Electric Sodcast Studios.
She's out of control already, I can tell. I've got to control this woman. I've got to control her. Over here. Tonight, they're totally compos mentis, whatever that means, I don't know, here in London. The fabulous, the legendary, the sensational, the Four Tops.
Oh, that's a good start, wasn't it, Mick?